leading stations.
Oh, yeah.
Joining Brian and Brett now on Sports Time is national college football writer for CBS Sports, Memphis native and Tennessee grad, who you can find on Twitter X at David W. Cobb. It's David Cobb.
Well, I'm always on social media throughout the week, and I see commitments and decommitments and player movement, both college football and college basketball. I'm always so excited when I see those on social media to talk to David Cobb on Mondays because I know he's on top of all of it. David Cobb joins us now from CBS Sports, college football and college basketball. That's what he covers over there at CBS Sports. David, so much to get to today. I mean, plenty, both college basketball and college football, but I want to start off on the basketball side, specifically with the Tigers. Last week, it came out that Jaden Quaintance was looking at Memphis. There was some sort of interest on both sides between Memphis and Jaden Quaintance, the five-star big man who was committed to Kentucky, decommitted from Kentucky, said he wasn't interested in going to Arkansas. He was supposed to visit Memphis this past weekend. It got postponed. He instead visited Arizona State and committed earlier today. What do you understand about Jaden Quaintance as a player and his commitment, and what do you think Bobby Hurley's doing over there getting this big-time freshman?
Yeah, isn't it crazy even now to see a five-star prospect going to Arizona State?
Yeah.
We've seen more and more of this over the last 5 or 6 years, but it's still kind of shocking in a sense when you see it. The five-star prospects, the McDonald's All-Americans, the guys that only ever used to go to Duke, Kansas, North Carolina, Kentucky, or maybe UCLA, or maybe Louisville, or maybe a school where they had an obvious hometown type of connection. Now, the top freshmen in college basketball are, yeah, a lot of them are still going to Duke, and Cal Perry's going to get his, but man, it's every year, there are five-star players going to schools that you would have never thought of before.
And they may eventually get them the second time, the second transfer.
Right. So, I mean, I think the portal is kind of the reason behind it, because instead of prioritizing the five-star guys out of high school, a lot of these programs are going after the five-star portal prospects instead. So it's allowed the talent to spread out a little bit more out of the high school ranks. So I don't think if you're a Memphis fan that you should be too disappointed on missing out on a high school big man. The hit rate for high school prospects who are highly touted at power forward or at center, the hit rate for them in year one of college basketball is not all that high. I mean, you know, the best you can kind of hope for in this era is a Jalen Duren, who was really effective as a freshman at Memphis. But you know, those types of players are more and more rare because it's just difficult to come in as a freshman big and hang with the 22 and 23 year old vets.
Sure. Well, I've seen reports, I've seen rumors out there that Bobby Hurley has been having conversations with production companies and streaming outlets trying to get a docuseries for his Arizona State basketball team that would in turn pay NIL money to the players on the team. And a lot of people have been pointing to that as maybe a big reason that Jaden Quaintance went to Arizona State. Have you heard any of this about maybe a potential docuseries tied to NIL with Arizona State?
No, I've not. And if he's going that route, then how come the Memphis kids didn't get paid for the harder way?
That's a great point.
A few years back. Yeah. You got to turn over every stone in this era to be competitive. That's, I mean, to the extent that's true, give Bobby Hurley his flowers there and some credit, because that's outside the box thinking.
Sure,
if that's his idea and he's pushing that, you know, it's not the collective doing that. It's not some third party or athletic department initiative. That's a coach grinding, you know, trying to pull himself up by his bootstraps to make himself competitive. I like the innovative thinking there. Arizona State is a program that's in for a rude awakening going to the Big 12. They could barely hang in the Pac-12,
yeah.
And now they're going to the toughest conference in America. So he's got to do something. So I love that. It's an interesting idea. Arizona State's going to have some talent, but they've had talent the last, you know, several years, and Bobby Hurley hadn't been able to do a ton with it. His brother Dan is the best coach in the family. Mm-hmm. Bob was the best player. Oh, actually, you know what? Bob Hurley Sr. is probably the best coach in the family. But it's just funny that dynamic of like the brother who was the star player is actually not the better coach. It was the other brother, the younger brother, who was just a mediocre player who's actually become the star coach.
Yeah, Bobby Hurley, MOP of the Final Four on those back-to-back Duke national champions in 91 and 92. He was in 91 and then Leitner in 92. David Cobb, I'm going to give you these four big college basketball brands. I'm going to give you Indiana, UCLA, Kentucky, and Louisville. Which one is it over for, and we just haven't realized it? We just hadn't written the final sentence and hit the period?
All right, so you gave me Indiana, UCLA, Louisville, and there was
Kentucky.
Kentucky, okay. I'm going to go with UCLA there. And it's partly because they are moving over to the Big Ten. I just think that's going to be really difficult for those West Coast basketball schools that are going to have to make probably around 7, maybe 8 cross-country road trips during league play every year. And then we've seen UCLA struggle with NIL, and that's just going to be a really difficult thing for Mick Cronin to navigate. His first few years there, he had a lot of continuity, and I just don't think he's going to be able to recruit or retain the talent to really succeed or thrive in the Big Ten. I think he's a really good coach. I just don't know if he's going to be able to get the players there and keep the players there for UCLA to be anything close to, you know, the historical standard there. So I would say that's of those four, they're the one to me that feels, you know, the least likely to make another Final Four maybe over the next 10 years.
Kind of like Nebraska in football, but I agree with you for all those reasons you stated with what they're doing with the move to the Big Ten, the NIL trouble they're having, and this. Those other three I named, they're not in the middle of a major pro town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I mean, Indiana has a long road ahead of it, but I think if not Mike Woodson, the next coach can come in there and get that place rolling immediately. Mm-hmm. Because Indiana is just—I mean, it's too big to fail in that state.
But we thought Tom Crean would do that there.
We did. It's been a long drought. It's been a long drought for Indiana in terms of relevance. UCLA has not made a Final Four within the time frame that, you know, Indiana last did. Certainly, so, you know, Mick Cronin made a Final Four with UCLA. I just think the changing conference dynamics for UCLA, for USC, for Oregon, for Washington. It's going to make it really, really difficult for them to compete in basketball. And Indiana's doing well for itself in this portal cycle. And Mike Woodson did make the NCAA tournament his first 2 years, which was a marked improvement from what they had done under Archie Miller, and certainly an improvement over the way that the Tom Crean era ended. So I don't know that you know, Mike Woodson is, you know, he's kind of on the hot seat, but I don't know that he gets enough credit for the fact that he actually went in there and got some tangible results early in his tenure in a way that set him apart from his predecessors.
Mm-hmm. Brett mentioned Louisville in there as one of the teams, and Pat Kelsey now in there and has done a nice job so far with the transfer portal. They get Chucky Hepburn last week, which is a big pickup for them. How do you expect Pat Kelsey with this team that he's putting together to fare in his first season? Obviously, we know what these past 2 years have looked like. How much of an improvement, if any, do you think we see in year one for Pat?
I think Louisville is going to immediately compete in the ACC. I think Louisville might be better than Kentucky because it's easier to make hay in the ACC than it is in the SEC. I mean, historically, that was not true, but the status of ACC basketball right now is such that after Duke and North Carolina, it is all up for grabs. And Louisville's already got a core together that should be pretty competitive in the ACC. I've got several of their commitments ranked in my transfer rankings over at CBS and a couple more that are on the fringes. And Truckee Hepburn's a guy that started over 100 games at point guard in the Big Ten. Yeah. You get a guy like that in there to run the show, I think that that's, you know, they're immediately going to be competitive in the ACC. So if you're looking at the big-time first-year coaches like John Calipari at Arkansas, Pat Kelsey at Louisville, and then, of course, Mark Pope at Kentucky, who's going to be the most successful of those three? I wouldn't be stunned if it's Pat Kelsey at Louisville, even though the Cardinals were atrocious the last two seasons under Kenny Payne. I mean, Pat Kelsey, I could see him winning 20 games in year one and getting into the NCAA tournament.
David, how and what do you expect the SEC basketball schedule to look like? 18 games, but how do you divvy it up? How do you come up with a formula?
You got to have a couple of those permanent rivalries, right? Like, we got to have Alabama and Auburn play each other twice. We got to have Tennessee and Kentucky. Yeah, play each other twice. I don't know. What are those other protected games? We got to have Ole Miss and Mississippi State.
Texas and OU.
Twice. Absolutely. Texas A&M and Arkansas, maybe. That one feels kind of natural. What are some of those other, like, SEC games that you look forward to?
Florida-Georgia.
That really pop. Yeah, I mean, because of the Mike White factor, that's a good one. I would love to see Arkansas and Kentucky play each other twice. We got to do that. We got to have Cal go back to Rupp, and then we got to have Kentucky go to Fayetteville. I mean, if we're not playing Kentucky and Arkansas twice next season, then what are we doing?
The tough ones are the two Columbias, Mizzou and South Carolina. Who do you match them up with? They're kind of forcing it in football with the battle line rivalry between Arkansas and Missouri that nobody likes.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe they play each other. I don't know. There are some, like, unnatural rivalries on the basketball side. I think it's easier to identify those, like, must-have rivalries in football. And to a certain extent in basketball, it's just a continuation of those same rivalries. But, I mean, Tennessee-Kentucky's been so good. Rick Barnes has been really competitive against Kentucky over the years. I think that one's one we got to have. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do from a scheduling standpoint. It gets convoluted when you're only going to have a couple of situations where teams are playing each other twice, whereas it used to be real simple. You played everyone in your division. Mm-hmm. Twice, and then you played everyone in the other division once. Well, there's nothing simple about scheduling anymore in college sports.
Yeah. David, who got the better news last week? North Carolina with Seth Trimble taking his name out of the transfer portal and RJ Davis announcing that he'd be back at North Carolina next year, or Kansas with the commitment from Alabama transfer Ryland Griffin and Hunter Dickinson's commitment to come back for another year? Who got the better news?
I would go North Carolina on that, because it seemed for a minute there like maybe R.J. Davis was on to the next thing. Yeah, he's played 4 years at North Carolina. He's done a lot for the Tar Heels. He was an All-American this past year. He's been to a Final Four. I mean, what was left for R.J. Davis to accomplish? Not much, but he's coming back anyway. So that, to me, huge. And then I love that he mentioned Seth Trimble, because not a lot of people know who that guy is, because he was behind some really talented players this past year at UNC. But he went in the portal and then decided, you know what, I'm going to stay at UNC. And that one, I mean, you're going to look up in February, and that guy's going to be an all-ACC type of player, because he does it on both ends of the floor, and he's going to be a breakout star in college basketball next season. So I think North Carolina and what Hubert Davis is doing is, to me, they're one of the biggest winners of this offseason so far. And if I were ranking teams way too early, they'd be a slam dunk lock, you know, to be top five for me right now.
Wow.
David, I'm with you. I think that's the biggest move, because he's going to have the basketball in his hands more than anybody else named in Bryant's question in the premise from Bryant. David, I'm going to ask you this probably half dozen more times the rest of this calendar year. So far in all the movements, who's the next Dalton Connect?
Woo! If I knew that, I'd be out running a consulting firm, a transfer portal recruiting service, something like that. But, you know, it's interesting trying to ID that. Well, one, okay, there is a guy from Northern Colorado who averaged similar numbers at Northern Colorado this past year. His name is St. Thomas, and he's going to USC. So he's going to play for Eric Musselman, who's had a lot of success with transfers in the past. Now, he's a different player. He's not as high volume on three-point shooting. He's a little bit more of a traditional type of, like, power forward player, but he can play out on the perimeter, too. So in the very literal sense, it may be St. Thomas at USC because he came from the same school as Dalton Connect. But I'll give you a couple more names, two guys that I really like. One is Jalen Blackman at Miami, and he's going to have the ball in his hand a ton coming out of Stetson. So you're looking for somebody totally off the radar to fit that Dalton Connect profile. Jalen Blackman is somebody who could do it. He was unreal at Stetson this past year, and now he's going to a Miami team that's going to have a ton of shots available. And so we could see him be something around a 20 points per night guy in the ACC. And right now you're not seeing him in the top 10 of anybody's rankings. And I'm even high on him by having him in the top 40. But that's the type of guy who can jump up a level and really make an impact, especially when you see the situation that he's walking into.
Mm-hmm. Talking to David Cobb from CBS Sports. He joins us every week to talk college basketball and college football. It just keeps getting better for UConn. Back-to-back national championships. They're getting guys out of the portal, including Aiden Mahaney from St. Mary's was their star. A fun player to watch. I mean, how in the world how are they able to do this over at UConn? I mean, what do they got? They have all the answers over there.
Yeah, they got a lot of money. Okay, I got a theory on the Big East basketball schools. Now, I know UConn has a football team, and I'm sure at least a few of those guys make something in NIL. But by and large, UConn and these other Big East teams, their NIL funding is going towards 13 guys, not 85, like you see with SEC and Big Ten schools and ACC and Big 12. Football is the primary NIL source, you know, in those conferences. But for UConn and for the Big East, their boosters are giving their money to the basketball team. And that means there's a whole lot more to go around for that select few group of basketball players than there would be if you were trying to pay 80-plus football players. So I think UConn, they just got money. And now they also have the, you know, allure of consecutive national titles and a really well-defined system with a star coach. And so, I mean, that if you get a call from UConn and you're in the portal, they're going to the top of your list right now. And so I'm actually curious to see if Aiden Mahaney pans out. I think he will because of where he's going. But he was a little bit up and down this past year at St. Mary's. So he can be electric, but he can also take some head-scratching shots. And, you know, I'll just be curious to see how he fares going up against those Big East caliber of athletes every night, you know, transferring in from a WCC school.
David, I can confirm that UConn has a football team. In fact, on the schedule right now for 2027, on September 11th, on 9/11/2027, Ole Miss plays at UConn in football.
No way.
I promise you.
How about that?
Return game in Oxford in 28.
I love it.
Can you explain that to me? Or maybe like, why?
I cannot.
Why? That is awesome.
I can slightly explain it. We're supposed to play them non-conference COVID year. And we know how that kind of – what that did to a lot of scheduling. And I don't know if the return game was on that – was scheduled then or not, but that was one of the non-conference games that was scrapped when the SEC played conference only. Speaking of Ole Miss – David, if you notice that Lane Kiffin, in his time at Ole Miss, he has not had a first-round draft choice and only one second-round draft pick, and he's won 34 games and 29 in the last 3 years, and he's finally getting the roster the way he wants it. If you hadn't gotten him by now, you probably missed because he has built something.
Yeah, and this is the perfect time for the Rebels to strike. And, oh, by the way, it's interesting you mentioned that 2020 game against UConn, Brett. That 2020, people forget this, but that 2020 UConn team, they won the national championship. The New York Times declared that UConn was the national champion of 2020 because they chose not to play.
How about that?
So,
Wow, yeah. You get rings.
All the news fit to print.
I don't know. We still joke about that. But anyway, so yeah, feather in the cap for the Rebels in 2020. They had the national champions on their schedule.
Yeah.
The 2024 Rebels, I think, are in a wonderful position because of the transition that's occurring at Alabama, because of the pressure that Texas and Oklahoma are going to be under as they enter the league. And I do understand that Ole Miss has Georgia on the schedule. Like, I get that. Like, that's not going to be easy, but this is sort of the build to year, like the year that everything culminates. And oh, by the way, the playoff size is tripling this season as well. And so it is, I without a doubt, playoff or bust in Oxford this year. And that's not as grandiose of a statement as it used to be now that we're in that 12-team era. But I think, you know, Ole Miss should be hosting a playoff game in the first round or have a bye. I think they are in the running to be one of those top four. I'm not going to predict that. I'm not saying it's likely.
They have to win the SEC to do it, though.
But they're good enough to do that. Georgia's there. Georgia's not going anywhere. LSU's going to have something to say about it. There's
Texas.
Other teams, you know, yeah, absolutely. Texas is going to be there. But I'll say this. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we have a playoff game at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium, you know, here in, 8 months? I think that's very much on the table.
December the 21st, I think, is that Saturday of the three playoff games. There will be one that Friday night in primetime playoff weekend. David, they did a lot of mock going back to the past and looking at years and just how it would have worked out. And one thing that I think probably rattled the college football chieftains, notably Greg Sankey, is that it was way too many rematches of games that were already played that year. Ross Dellinger wrote a pretty long piece about it. I'm sure you saw it. I hope they engineer it and manipulate it to where there's not a lot of regular season rematches in the playoffs. I don't think the public wants that.
Yeah, but at the same time, do you manipulate the rankings to get matchups that you want? I hope we don't manipulate the rankings to engineer certain matchups because, you know, it should be a meritocracy. That's going to be a tough situation for the committee to navigate. And what's their criteria? What's their ultimate sort of guiding light in terms of what they're working towards? So are they just trying to put together an invitational with the most appealing matchups, or is it truly a 1-12 meritocracy?
And to a certain extent,
to a certain extent, though, it's with the group of five guarantee, you know, you've already carved out an exception there. You've already sort of cleared
for
the deck
12,
to ensure,
probably,
you know, somebody gets access. So it's I don't know, this selection committee, people think that it's going to get easier for them expanding to 12, but all you're going to do is usher in a new set of problems because whereas it used to be about who got left out, like the Florida State did this past year, now it's you know, it's not going to be the fifth team. It's going to be the 13th team and the 14th team whose resumes we're parsing. And then you're going to have the number five and the number six saying, no, it should have been us who got a bye. And, you know, so all these problems that we've seen with the four-team playoff, they're not going away. I think they might only be getting more significant.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. Well, David, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy your week. We'll do it again next Monday.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, David. David Cobb joining us from CBS Sports, talk some college basketball and college football like he does every single week with us. Make sure you go check out his work at CBSSports.com. Go check out his transfer rankings. I know he's put in a ton of time on that this offseason for college basketball. So go check that out on CBSSports.com. Let's go ahead and get to a break. When we come back, it was a busy week in Major League Baseball. We've also got a couple of new City Connect jerseys that have been revealed over the last couple of days. So we'll talk about all of that next on Sports Time.
You already know you can listen to Sports 56 anywhere with the Sports 56 app or at sports56whbq.com. But you can also watch us daily with live video of all of our shows on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Welcome back into Sports Time. It was a fun weekend of baseball. Brad, I know you were at Redbirds over the weekend. I went to Tigers in East Carolina over the weekend. And so I know that was fun for both of us. But Major League Baseball, also a fun weekend watching all of those games. I want to get to a couple of those games, but I want to start off with the City Connect jerseys that are being unveiled by multiple teams. We saw the Mets the other day against the Cardinals. They wore their City Connect jersey. But have you seen the Tampa Bay Rays? They unveiled theirs earlier this morning. By any chance, have you seen pictures of those uniforms?
I think by the way you phrased that, You're a little bit worried about my mental health.
Well, a little bit, but also I think they're hilarious. So yes, a little bit of both.
So they're so bad, they're buffoonish?
So I'm guessing you haven't seen them then.
I have not. The answer to your question is no, I have not.
So the hats, I'm going to send you a picture of the hats.
I thought you framed it because you were worried that it might cause me the red fox big one.
Well, you know, Brett, I think when you see them, they probably will, but I love the hats, and I'm going to try to find a picture of the hats so that I can
Brian,
send it to you.
At this point, I don't know that there's anything except for the player that's been used going back in.
Yes, yes.
There's one other thing kind of in the broad that I think it'll be after me.
Okay.
I hope so.
Okay.
Of no leagues, no divisions, the top, just the top 12 out of, by then, 32 or 33 teams make the playoffs.
I hate
there will be no National League, American League playoffs.
Interesting. Yes, I hope.
But besides those two things, I mean, between now, both leagues, DH, the what we do with extra innings, what we've done with the pizza boxes, what we've done with the cooking mitt, and you saw the player once this weekend, and they're talked to, he went into second, feet first.
Sure.
But the cooking mitt that is as long as my leg, he had it raised in the air and it deflected the ball on the double play turn.
Yes, yes.
So I don't know what I don't know much else baseball can roll out and violate any more sensibilities.
Well, that's really really good to hear because it sounds like we might be rolling on your. On your no baseball slander, which I love.
But you know I'm mostly keeping my good manners until I go to St. Louis in a few weeks.
You are, and then I think everything will change.
Well, it blows.
Yeah, it blows.
It blows the smithereens after that.
So, Brett, I just texted you the logo that is going to be on the hat for the Tampa Bay Rays. And if you see it.
I see it.
It is a devil ray.
It's our bridge!
It's the bridge!
It's the bridge!
Yes! The bridge that everybody complains about is on the hat.
Closest I've ever come to saying a really bad word over there. I almost inserted one. It's the bridge.
It is, though. It is.
Why do you think we... How can we use it in logo and in marketing if we can't get across it?
Who knows? I mean, when I saw that this morning, I fell out of my chair. I mean, I could not believe it. And sure enough,
Brian, I'm a little upset. You waited all day to spring that on me while we're live, knowing that I might have said a really bad word.
Well, you know, I didn't think about that. That did not get to me. But yes, I wanted it to be.
It's the bridge in all its glory.
I wanted.
Now, before I say too much, are they trying to pay tribute to the bridge that collapsed in Baltimore?
I don't think
Before
so.
Before I say something offensive.
I don't think so. I think you're good. If you're not, for some reason, somehow.
Because, you know, we always set up everything to where you just can't criticize it or you're the biggest meanie ever.
I don't think so. I think that would be a far stretch. I think this is the bridge that nobody can get over. I believe so.
That bridge.
Also, and I can't find
it. Well, I hope nothing happens to that dang bridge.
Geez, I hope not either. I can't find this logo.
They'll blame it on me and you.
You're absolutely right, they will. I think this logo is on their pants, the second logo. The logo I sent you is on the hat. Their second logo...
You know, I don't mind this.
I don't either. But the second logo.
I don't prefer it. Just
sure.
But look, Tampa has no tradition. It's not like we're throwing the pinstripes out.
That's a very, very good point. And I'm trying to find the second logo, like on a hat or something, because if I find it on a hat, I definitely will buy it. Their secondary logo.
And I don't mind a lot of teams. It very interchangeable looks. I've said on these airways many times, I don't know how, but Baltimore and the Braves both, they can run out a bunch of different looks that all look good.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And they've got some good-looking jerseys and different colors and throw them all out there. I'm completely
Pirates almost can.
Pirates
can go kind of the Mazeroski look. Uh-huh. They can go the original double-knit look. They can go the We Are Family look.
Yep. No, you're right about that. A lot of good looks. I think, though, as excited as I was for you to see the bridge one, and I don't have a good picture of it, so I can't send it to you, so you'd have to find it from Tampa Bay. Their secondary logo is a devil ray riding a skateboard, which I think is awesome. And I need to find on like a shirt.
Has that ever happened?
You know, I don't think so.
That's okay.
Think very hard, but it makes for a hilarious logo.
Now, there for a few years, they were trying to move away from devil.
Well, I don't think it's really a devil ray. Just a stingray, I guess, is what I should call it. But I always end up calling it a devil ray because of that's what they were forever. But yes, it is a stingray riding a skateboard, which is just a hilarious idea. Because
under the bridge.
Under the bridge, perfect. I mean, I love that. I love that. So I don't know when they're going to debut these jerseys, these uniforms, but I can't wait.
Cue the Red Hot Chili Peppers under the bridge.
How about that? Who knew we'd get that reference in? Brett, you told me earlier that the Cardinals were very close to their best week since the 2022 season?
The end of 22. Wow. We know 23 was a certified disaster from start to finish. If they had completed that yesterday, that would have been a 5-1 week. But 4-2, it might have still been the best week for the Cardinals since the end of the 22 season. They did go to the playoffs that year.
Sure.
And it was our fault. Yeah. We jinxed them on the air that Friday against Philadelphia.
I remember
that was our fault.
Well,
I'm booking hotel rooms on the air and going up to Gainesville.
If I remember correctly, I begged both of y'all to stop.
We wouldn't do it, would we?
And y'all wouldn't. It was a lock. And then I'm sitting over there on the producer side watching it all fall apart. And
I mean crumble.
Oh, yeah, and very quickly, too.
and still in that mode.
Yeah.
Brian, I'm to the point now. This is kind of all my kind of good attitude before I go to see the Red Sox.
Okay.
If we could have that game against the Dodgers back, boy,
I'm
afraid that could loom all year. And yesterday, I would say great April.
Certainly better than I thought it would be. Good start. I think if you clean some things up, you're fine. But
starting pitching's been pretty good.
Sure.
Relief pitching's been pretty solid.
Yeah, it's bats kind of starting to get there,
but they're real quiet.
Yeah, but they're starting to kind of get there. It feels like today's game for the Cardinals against the Tigers has officially been postponed. A lot of weather up in Michigan. They'll play a doubleheader tomorrow. Which will be fun. A lot of baseball, a lot of Cardinal baseball for us, which is always a
Cardinals and the
thing.
Tigers.
Yeah.
Met three times in World Series history, 06, win 67, tough luck, heartbreak, loss, and 1934.
All right. What do you got on the 1934 series?
Well, that was the apex of the Gas House Gang.
Okay.
After that really ended the Gas House Gang era, and that was the World Series that Joe Medwick slid hard into third, and the crowd home crowd of the Tigers took exception when he went back out to left field and peppered him in left field with garbage and refuse. Went full Neyland Stadium on Ducky Medwick. And the commissioner of baseball, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, probably in the only time ever in baseball history during a game, he pulled Ducky Medwick out for his safety.
Wow. Are you serious?
Yeah, but the Cardinals won that series. Dizzy Dean, part of the Gas House Gang, his brother Paul Dean, and that was the World Series. And there are two great books. I talked about the Barry Switzer book a lot last week. And said it should be a movie.
Mm-hmm.
There are two books. You get these two books together, and I think it would go over on the Gas House Gang. One is called The Dizziest Season of Them All, and I can't remember that author's name. The other one is just The Gas House Gang, and the author, I think, if I'm pronouncing his name right, John Heidendary. They're both excellent. Great story. Leo DeRocher was on The Gas House Gang, and Dizzy Dean knew Leo DeRocher was stealing from him. He knew he was stealing cash money out of his wallet from him, so he marked the bills. He marked bills, you know, this old-fashioned way, and goes to his locker, and his cash is not in his wallet. You know, he thinks he's got, you know, $50 in it. Sure. That'd be a lot of money in 1934. Yeah. A lot of money now.
Yeah.
And he has nothing in his wallet. Goes to Leo DeRocher, grabs him by his throat and says, "Open your wallet." He goes, "How dare you?" He said, "Open your wallet." Open it up. It was the marked bills in it.
Oh, wow. Holy
and
cow.
Proceeded to kick his
hand
in.
Sure, of course.
In that World Series, also, Dizzy Dean was running the bases and didn't get low enough on a double play throw. Mm-hmm. And as you were taught back then, if they don't get low enough, you crown them.
Right.
You put it right between their eyes. They did, knocked him cold. They thought he was dead. And the next day in the Detroit newspaper, the headline said, "Dizzy Dean undergoes brain X-ray. They found nothing."
That's great. Oh, that's awesome. Wow, I might have to check out those books if there are plenty of stories like that. And that's
they're
that's
great.
Hilarious.
Imagine those guys on a train in those days, and it was pretty ribald.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. That sounds like an interesting time. But some really good series starting this week. Braves-Mariners should be a good one. Rays-Brewers should be a lot of fun. Brewers playing really well right now. So some really good baseball, but like we mentioned, Cardinals, nothing today. They'll play a doubleheader tomorrow. Yankees-Orioles, another really good series that starts tonight. But let's go ahead and get to a quick break. When we come back, it'll be time for Big Number of the Day.
Start your day with Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10, right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Big Daddy.
Hello, Big Brand.
It's a guy, he wants to be big, then he gets big, he doesn't want to be big anymore, then he gets small, but the suit's too big.
Big Daddy.
The big boy.
You're a big guy.
I think she's trying to pull a fast one on Big Daddy.
The big number of the day.
Well, my big number, I'm getting complicated with these big numbers. My big number is two big numbers, but they go together.
Two.
First big number is 40. The second number is 3. Over the weekend, the Mavericks became the first team ever to lose an NBA playoff game in regulation while having one player score 40 or more points. That was Kyrie Irving. And another to have a triple-double. That would be Luka Doncic. This season has just been unbelievable when it comes to triple-doubles. But yeah, first team ever to lose a game when they had two players do something like that. It really shows, for one, how good those players are and how good this series has been when you can have two players do something like that and still lose that game.
But my question on Friday about Dallas, who is that reliable three? Yeah. You say P.J. Washington.
I do, but I think that's more of like the bringing it defensively, giving you stuff defensively, maybe not popping off the stat sheet every single game, but doing stuff that goes to winning basketball.
Hard for two to beat five.
Sure. No, absolutely. And you're going up against a Clippers team that is loaded.
Almost could have used 90 as my big number talking about the 1934 World Series.
Sure.
And I just saw on PTI they honored turning 90 today, Louis Aparicio.
Oh, wow.
Little Louie, and he played minor league baseball here at Russwood Park.
Wow.
When the Memphis team was affiliated with the Chicago White Sox, and that developed a lot of White Sox fans in Memphis in those years. But my big number is 59. You say 59 in Memphis, and it's usually for Al Guyberger, but this year it's for the SEC players in the draft. 59 SEC players. They win the draft again. Yeah. Damn SEC privilege. Yeah. ESPN fix it. Overrated. They're not that good. 59. Second was Pac-12 in a walk-off, in the walk-off year for the Conference of Champions at 43.
Wow, incredible. I mean, it's always fun to see how many of these SEC guys get taken every year. I mean, it's incredible just to see, you know, how good these teams are.
Every position.
And how much they produce. It's incredible. And then kind of on the complete opposite, how sad it is to watch the Pac-12, kind of their last song and dance of the of football.
Did it to themselves.
And say, you know, here are our guys, and going to have some really good guys in the NFL, but no longer a conference.
And it destabilized the sport more than anything else. You can talk conference raiders, corporate raiders, all you want. The Pac-12 has the college football world on this knife's edge more than anything else.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, the Pac, you said it. They did it to themselves. And, I mean, who would have thought even last year before this happened that a whole conference would be gone, and a power conference at that.
In 3 weeks.
I mean, crazy. Literally unbelievable.
Another note about that 1934 World Series.
Yeah.
A friend of mine just texted me this. This is a good note.
Okay.
The last World Series that both managers were player managers.
Wow.
Frankie Frisch for the Cardinals and Mickey Cochran for the Tigers.
I love that. Speaking of player manager, I saw a video. I guess it happened either Saturday or Sunday, probably Saturday during the draft, or maybe yesterday. But the New York Giants had like a live kind of radio show or something like that, where they had guys that work for their media side of things talking about the draft and all this stuff. And they said, we're hearing, or they had somebody call in and say, hey, did y'all see the breaking news that Eli Manning just signed with the Giants? And they were like, no, I don't think that's the case. And one of them pulls out his phone. I'll check that. And he goes and looks, and he pulls up like all these fake posts that are you know, that they've made to look like it's actually ESPN and you know, Adam Schefter and all these guys.
Well, some people have plenty of time, don't they?
And so they're showing it to the other guy that's co-hosting and showing. They're like, look, it's ESPN reporting it and Sports Illustrated and yada, yada, yada. And this guy's fully believing Eli Manning just signed with the Giants. And he's like, I mean, what do you do with Eli Manning? I mean, you got to put him out there. But, like, is he going to be like a player coach? Or, like, well, like, how does that work? And it was so funny, this little prank that they pulled on him, and you just made me.
So he bit hard.
Bit extremely hard and was like, man, I can't believe Eli's back.
Did you see the shakeup at CBS with their pregame show?
I did.
For NFL.
I did, yes. That will be interesting. A little bit of new blood, but
It will be. I don't watch a lot of the pregame shows because I'm getting back from somewhere usually at that point. It, you know, it's December for me before I can really lock in and watch a lot of pregame shows. The little bit I watched, I thought it was fine.
Sure.
Of all of them, I don't know which one I prefer more than the rest.
Yeah.
I'm kind of channel checking to all of them.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think they all do a good job. And I'm
kind
of like,
no big criticism.
No,
for me from it.
Yeah,
but things change.
Sure. And I'm like you. I don't get to see much of any of it. Before those noon games start. But, you know, certainly a shakeup. I think Matt Ryan would be good. You know, it seems like he's comfortable
he's
in that
just
role.
Played.
And sure, and we'll have good insight. But, you know, Phil Simms, Boomer Esiason, out. And, you know, I'm not sure what happened there. If it was their choice, you know, the company's choice.
It's usually not their choice.
No, usually not. But, you know, they're maybe, you know, getting a little older, maybe decide to step away. But they are. I'm kind of with you. I think
we all do.
Sure, but I'm with you. I think it was more of the company's choice. But I think Matt Ryan will be good in that role, and they've got a good team over there. And
I know I would. I think most people that have had that level of network success, especially after stellar playing careers, you can't feel like you got misdone.
No.
I mean,
no.
I know whenever, whatever for me. I'm not doing that. I was treated very well.
Sure, but definitely interesting But I'm with you. I think Matt Ryan's going to do a good job. I think that show's going to roll on like it has been, and I think a lot of people are going to tune in. But let's go ahead and wrap up this hour. I'm going to say show. We still got another hour, and it's going to be a really fun hour because when we come back to start at 5 o'clock, DeMichael Cole, the Grizzlies beat writer at the Commercial Appeal, he's going to join us. We'll talk a little bit of Grizzlies, but we'll talk a lot about the NBA playoffs. We'll do that next on Sports Time.